Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Makone Maja. Let's get into our first story today, and this is about work you've been doing, Makone. You have been writing to the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, Dean McPherson, to ask exactly how many expropriating authorities there are in the country. Expropriation Act, which allows expropriation without compensation, is effectively, it includes this sort of power has been given to expropriating authorities, but it's unclear exactly how many there are. How many expropriating authorities are there in the country? Does this mean that like every government department, every local municipality, what exactly does this mean? So McCorney, please explain what you were writing about and how many expropriating authorities there could be.
So we've written to Minister McPherson because his office is the custodian of the Expropriation Act, and so he has oversight over it. And one of my biggest sources of frustrations in the public discourse around the Act is this idea that there are adequate safeguards, adequate reinforcements. People don't need to be concerned at all about the poorly defined terms within the Act. And if they are, they'll shoo you away by telling you that the courts will then intervene to save the day. And yet we can't even determine exactly how many government organizations can expropriate property, right? And we know that expropriations can take place below market value and for explicitly no payment at all. So we've written to the minister to help us identify and provide a comprehensive list of exactly the number of government organizations, including state-owned entities, trusts, and Section 21 companies that do bear these powers. According to SARS, there are 1,105 government organizations. This is broken down between national government departments, provincial and local government, which includes municipalities, as you highlighted. We suspect this number could be significantly higher were state-owned entities be included to it, as well as trusts in those Section 21 companies. And that's why we would like the minister to clarify, because the Act vaguely defines expropriating authority. These are authorities that bear out these expropriating powers. And our concern is that what's basically been done is that hundreds of government entities have possibly been armed with these vast, enormous, yet poorly defined powers. I mean, what could possibly go wrong if you give this blunt weapon in the hands of possibly hundreds of government organizations? And yet we're told that property rights remain intact after the Expropriation Act. It's just simply not possible. But the ball is now in the minister's court for him to help us identify, because we're certain municipalities do have these powers, but what about the rest of the government and which entities exactly? So we want to understand the number of expropriating authorities as well as their scope. Do they all have equal access to these expropriating powers? And we've also asked him to provide a list of every expropriation that's taken place between 1994 and present date, because that will also, in moving forward, help us to discern whether the Act, this now 2025 Act, has ratcheted up the ability for the government to expropriate and whether that's been done. Is government since is able to expropriate easier now, and more government entities are able to expropriate and expropriate without compensation or below market value? Has this been happening at a higher rate? We can only know that if we have the number of expropriations pre the Act and post the Act becoming law.
Now, I think the more widely spread these powers are, the absolute worse it is for property rights in the country, as you say. You know, I think a lot of the focus is on some sort of grand national level threat where you'll have farms or something like that targeted, big commercial farms. But really, I think that would be a very minor part of a lot of this. The you know, if say you, local municipalities were able to do this kind of thing, you can immediately see some of those very corrupt, dysfunctional, bankrupt municipalities licking their lips and looking around for whatever they can get their hands on. And if you think that it's just going to be large commercial farmers or something that are going to be targeted there, it's going to be basically anyone with anything to take. I mean, even I could see people with relatively modest houses, people The example that always comes to my mind is you can easily see cheap houses on the edge of one of South Africa's townships suddenly being expropriated, and the public good reason is, well, you know, we need to build the township economy, and that's why we're going to be expropriating your land so we can build a mall here, because, you know, it'll do all these wonderful things for the local economy, and, you know, you're going to get below market compensation or no compensation. And that, to me, I think is a very serious concern that will cause significant damage to lots of lives.
And even if the act is used legitimately, right, the Minister of Electricity recently came out and said we need 14,500 kilometers worth of transmission lines to be constructed. South Africans ought to know, do these entities have legitimate power to expropriate? They've created a Ministry of Electricity now. Does it also carry those expropriating abilities? South Africans ought to know what their rights are with respect to these government organizations and state entities. So again, the minister has a responsibility to nip future abuses of such power, whether legitimately or illegitimately, as you extensively highlighted. He has a responsibility to protect South Africans against exploitation and violations of their property rights, which are now obviously so much more, South Africans are so much more vulnerable.
Exactly. One of the reasons why this bill should be repealed and amended. Okay. Let's move on to our next story. On Monday, in a media briefing, the government was trying to paint this as the great success in quarter four of 2024 of one of its job initiatives. This is in connection with the SA Youth.mobi and the National Youth Development Agency and all of these sort of government agencies that are supposed to help young people find jobs that we don't know a lot about. Anyway, they were trying to justify their existence here, and they said, look, we've created 76,569 jobs. And they broke those down, and when you actually, firstly, like as a sort of figure overall, this is a very small amount. The number of young people who are unemployed is now sort of well over 50%, and that is millions of people. So 76,000 is a tiny drop in the bucket there. But when you actually look at these sort of stats they're putting out here, they're really kind of, shall we say, generous to the government's interpretation here. 15,000 private sector placements via the Youth Employment Service. 5,500 TVET graduates placed through the Department of Higher Education and Training, and then more than half of the people in this figure are 43,000 young entrepreneurs supported by the National Youth Development Agency and Department of Small Business Development. And you're sort of like, okay, but like, what does that mean? Are those businesses all still working? Did they create sustainable wealth? Are we talking about, you know, people selling chips on the side of the road? Are we talking about some startup that's doing deliveries? Like, what, you know, the scope there is huge, and that's like more than half the numbers. I mean, I think, Makwane, to me, this really just kind of lays bare how these government programs to try and create jobs are just not even vaguely in the realm of reality. The only way we're going to create jobs is with private sector economic growth. What's your take on this?
Absolutely. I'm fairly easy to impress when it comes to like job creation. Give me one job and I'm happy. Five jobs, I'm overjoyed. 76,000 in a single quarter. You've got me, right? But then we start to scrutinize these figures and they begin to fall apart. I mean, these are vanity metrics. They're shouting out these tens of thousands of jobs in a single quarter. But that one, that the one of the ones you highlight, over half of them, 43,000, are support granted to young entrepreneurs. How is that a job opportunity? And what kind of support are we talking about? Are these now 46,000 young entrepreneurs able to register their businesses on the CIPC website? Are they able to maybe protect their intellectual property through trademarks and copyright? What kind of opportunities are we speaking about? It's so vaguely defined.
Mean they just all got a seminar where they were taught about how to manage their business once off, and then that was it.
It could very well be that. It could be mentorship, but how do we know that this was an actual young entrepreneur who's been given a job or work? It's such a scam. And these numbers and, you know, these words that are being used, it seems to me they're covering up what's actually happened in terms of the work that they claim has been created. So on closer scrutiny, it's just, it seems implausible. I'm sorry, but the National Youth Department would have to come out and defend these figures and also justify its existence. I mean, the NYDA has been around for years. We know they disperse millions of rands to young South Africans. And yet the youth unemployment rate, the graduate unemployment rate is so high. How have they been able to support young entrepreneurs? How have they been able to support youth in their seeking out employment opportunities? It's not clear from this example that that's been the case. Even the work where the National Department of Higher Education has granted 5,000 TVET graduates work opportunities, are these sustainable job opportunities? Are these seasonal work opportunities? What kind of opportunities are we speaking about here? And so the lack of detail, at least to me, creates suspicion of how substantive these work opportunities were.
Yeah, exactly. If the sort of top line number is only 76,000 and we're talking about such vague, generous terms, I think it really calls into question, you know, how much real actual good has been done by a program like this. It'd be also interesting to see in terms of cost per job, what the sort of bang for buck here was. And I suspect it's not going to be great. Okay, let's go on to our last story here. And Makhono, you know, we were talking about this beforehand and you said, like, we, you know, for example, in the first story there, we're talking about like these kind of quite deep questions about legislation, about, you know, what the powers of the government are, what the appropriate amount of protection people should have for personal freedom. That's like been a lot of the public debate. But when it sort of gets down to it, we actually sometimes forget that in some sectors, government is dropping the ball so aggressively that it actually doesn't even matter. I bring to attention this reporting, I think it was from Business Day, came out earlier this week, about the Deeds Office in Johannesburg, which is, according to the story, quote, bracing for lengthy delays and uncertainty as mounting health and safety issues at the city's Deeds Office continue to hamper property transfers. The story details that apparently the Deeds Office building, which is 5 decades old, has been plagued by infrastructure failures, including non-functional lifts, sewage leaks, and recent flooding that have disrupted operations. This has caused a whole bunch of negative effects. Mostly it's the delay of processing various deeds. There's some indication that at least possibly temporarily and maybe even permanently, some deeds have gone missing, which is really bad, obviously. And then you get the fact that when there are disputes around issues, because so many of the staff have to be sent home because the office is not fit for people to work in, it takes a really long time, some of the property agents to actually, you know, negotiate disputes or things with this office or have meetings with people, because you have to kind of get everyone to come in. You can't just go to the office and show up and meet with people there. So at a very fundamental level of like the nuts and bolts of working out who owns what and who has the rights to private property, government seems to be falling down here. And it's not even some grand malicious plan. It's just because the building hasn't been maintained. And I think, Makhono, this just highlights getting the basics right is the first step to making this country work. Your thoughts?
I'm glad you brought our viewers into the discussion we had pre the show, because this conversation around land and distribution of land and why so many people are deprived of access is very important. Becomes philosophical and politically contested. It becomes historiographical. And yet we can't even get the first part of that whole entire conversation, right, where we just have to get the deeds office churning out title deeds and obviously keeping them safe, because these are such important records. They're some of the most contested records in our country, and they're so crucial. If we can't even get the deeds office right, like you said, it just makes pointless all of these fights we've been having not just this year alone, but about issuing out of title deeds and securing property rights. You know, the Minister of Human Settlements came out last year and detailed broke down like from 1994 to 2000, from 2005 to 2020, how many title deeds have accumulated and backlogs. Millions, like even pre-94, right? Cumulatively, there's over a million. And I also suspect that this is one of the most important deeds offices in South Africa. It's based in Gauteng, so it carries deeds worth millions. And yet, what we may not know that those deeds are currently soaked in sewage.
It's literally all gone to Exactly. This is a sort of sober reminder that in some areas of government the sort of collapse of merit and efficiency and all these things has been so bad that if a new government came in, you could have the greatest property rights protections in the world. But if all of your deeds have, as you say, you know, are sitting in a filing cabinet that's under a meter of sewage, it's not going to do anyone any good. And I think this reminds us of why, even if we have a view of the state that is slimmed down, that the private sector has more role, there's still some really important stuff that the state needs to be doing well and correctly. And, you know, keeping title deeds safe, I think, is one of those things.
Yeah, no, like put your philosophies aside, folks. Let's forget the Marxists and the Leninists of the world. Let's go back to the basics. Water, buildings that are run, deeds, title deeds offices that are able to provide deeds, roads, that safety. Let's go back to that and build from there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today. We will not have a show tomorrow as we are all attending a work function. But I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you all on Monday on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a great day. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.